From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, August 5th. Coming up, a voice you hear on NPR has a new book reflecting on what happens when you live in China and disagree with the government. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Texas House Democrats are still in Illinois despite warrants issued trying to get them back to Austin. Texas Governor Greg Abbott last night said he's issued warrants ordering police to arrest any state lawmaker they find and compel them to go back to the Capitol so that the Texas House will have a quorum. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett faced this same threat as a Texas legislator in 2021 during a walkout over voting rights legislation. In the Chicago suburb of Warrenville, she encouraged Texas lawmakers to stand their ground.
I made sure that I put up my warrant from 4 years ago to make it plain that they talk a lot of noise, but these guys are weak. That's why they're over here trying to bully people. Bullies are always weak.
Texas legislators have been in Illinois and other states with Democratic majorities since Sunday. They're protesting a newly drawn congressional map that could eliminate 5 Democratic seats in the U.S. House. President Trump requested the remap. Illinois Congressman Danny Davis is retiring after 15 terms, and there are plenty of people who want to replace the Chicago Democrat. Alex Degman reports.
The list keeps growing. Here are the Democrats who have announced so far in the 7th District. Jericho Brown, Rory Hoskins, LaShawn Ford, Kamaria Kali, Jason Friedman, Melissa Conyers-Irvin, John McCombs, and Danica Lee. But Davis, during his retirement announcement, endorsed Ford, an Illinois state representative.
The best thing a community can do in electing someone to represent them in Congress is to get a young, seasoned person who can grow.
Ford has served in the Illinois House since 2007. I'm Alex Degman.
The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign's solar car team came in first place during a national competition last month. The Illini won the single occupant vehicle class of the 2025 Formula Sun Grand Prix in Kentucky. The student-run organization began building Calypso, an electric car powered by solar panels, in 2022. They drove the vehicle for 223 laps around the racetrack this year, breaking records. Illini Solar Car President Matthew Adler says it's the team's best ever performance.
We're riding on the shoulders of giants in our team that helped get us to where we are over the course of 3 cars. And we finally got to the point where we've won a competition.
Adler says he isn't ready to share the team's future plans yet, but he says this year's win proves Illini Solar Car is ready to race at the international level. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul finally explains why hospitals are not discriminating against patients, even though they're scaling back gender-affirming care. Kristen Schorsch of public radio station WBEZ reports.
4 major hospitals in Chicago have cut back gender-affirming care for people younger than 19. That's as the Trump administration threatens them with investigations and criminal prosecutions. For months, Raoul declined to explain to WBEZ how hospitals aren't violating a state law. They are banned from discriminating against patients because of their gender identity. Last week, he finally explained.
Our law does not mandate that all doctors, all providers, or hospitals provide all care.
Raoul says hospitals can take away services, and that's not discrimination. I'm Kristen Schorsch.
Still to come, a voice you hear on NPR has a new book reflecting what happens when you live in China and disagree with the government. That story is coming up next on 217 Today. But first, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Your forecast for today, mostly sunny with a high of 84 degrees and an east wind 5 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 64 degrees. A northeast wind 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 85 degrees. South wind 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear skies with a low of 66 degrees. A south wind 5 miles per hour. And for Thursday, sunny with a high of 87 degrees and a south wind 5 miles per hour.
Next time on the 21st Show, private equity companies aren't household names to most Americans, but they touch so many parts of our lives. Journalist Megan Greenwell writes about what that means for the people working on the front lines of the economy in her new book, Bad Company: Private Equity and the Death of the American Dream. I'm Christine Herman. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. For years, NPR's Emily Fang crisscrossed China, bringing intimate and informative stories about the nation of 1.4 billion people. But in 2022, the country's government said she could not report from there anymore. This year, Emily published a new book called Let Only Red Flowers Bloom. It explores what it's like to struggle to live under the rule of Chinese President Xi Jinping. IPM's Reginald Hardwick spoke with Emily. She started off by sharing the inspiration for the book's title.
In the 1950s, there was tightening of control under the then ruling Communist Party. They'd just been in power for a couple of years. And Chairman Mao Zedong at the time, said, let 100 flowers bloom, let 100 schools of thought contend. And it was supposed to be, it was suddenly that this idea that you could start expressing yourself again. And he said he wanted to hear dissenting ideas even. But then he changed his mind pretty quickly afterwards and arrested a bunch of people. And people now look back at that period of time as kind of a trap. But this phrase was then repeated back to me with a slight modification, let only red flowers bloom, red being the color of the Communist Party, a couple of years ago when I first started reporting for this book. And it was said to me by someone who had been very active in the publishing world, in the Muslim religious community in China as well. And he said to me, you know, in the past, the Communist Party wanted all flowers to bloom. There had been a few decades of relative political openness. Now that space is closing again, and the state will only let red flowers bloom. And that was the working title of my book as I was writing it. I thought about changing it, but I kept it because I felt like it encapsulated the ethos of the book well.
Your chapters, the lawyer, the businessman, the scooter thief, and so forth, talk about how various people deal with the increasing rule of law under Xi Jinping. Why did you lay it out like that?
I wanted to tell stories of people, much like I do in NPR stories and audio stories. But to take these big societal shifts and policies that very much matter, they're in the headlines, but then base them in how they affect people's lived experiences on the ground in not just China, but also Taiwan, in the U.S. You know, I profile the Chinese diaspora in North America, and how it's changing the course of their lives. And many of these people are not who we would consider dissidents. They're not famous people. They're ordinary folks who, most of them, see themselves as Chinese in some way, as patriots, and then all of a sudden find themselves on the outside and disenfranchised because of narrowing restrictions on what the Chinese state wants its citizens to think and behave. And so I also tried to get into the story in colorful ways. So, you know, I profile someone who goes viral for stealing scooters and then encounters firsthand the pervasive censorship online on the Chinese internet. Someone who is found chained in the middle of winter in a shed and provokes this nationwide soul searching about what is the role of women in Chinese society. A woman who starts out as a state prosecutor and becomes very, very famous for asking for leniency in a murder case, but then decides to switch sides and become a human rights lawyer that sues the government, and how she makes that transition and why she believes that China should develop in a different way than how it's currently developed. So going through people's really personal experiences to tell bigger stories about the China that we hear about all the time in the news and on NPR, you know, as a political competitor, as an economic superpower, but grounding it in people's very personal experiences.
For people who are used to the free press here in America, what is it like to report there? I was also struck by the fact that at one point you were blocked from entering the country.
China is so big and it's so organically diverse. I wanted to highlight that in the book. It's not a monolith. So there are more and more restrictions on especially Chinese reporters, but also foreign reporters like myself. But when I was there, there was still, as long as you were willing to push the envelope a little bit and be on the road all the time, there was still so much that you could get. People who are still willing to talk despite the dangers. And that's still true today. But when I was there, I think one of the big developments was there's always had been in-person surveillance and interference in reporting. But if you got the information, you managed to convince people to talk to you, we would get it out there. We'd publish. We'd put it on air. There are no restrictions, of course, on NPR as an American company with what we have to publish. We don't comply with Chinese censorship orders. But when I was in China, the digital surveillance tools became so much more mainstream. And especially when the COVID pandemic hit and a lot of foreigners and a lot of reporters either left or were unable to come back into China, there were just fewer people to surveil. And so that meant that you had a growing security state, essentially more police in China because their budget was increasing and fewer targets to surveil. And so the digital surveillance of people we talked to, our travel, our reporting plans, the people that we hired and worked with, my on-the-ground movements just became so much more closely tracked. And in the past, where you might have, say, you know, a day or two before local authorities might find out that you were on the road and traveling to a place and meeting a person, we would have 1 or 2 hours in the last couple of years because they'd just be able to find us so easily.
What do you want most for people to understand about this book and the people that you've profiled in it?
The story of China is increasingly global. So there's a reason why this story, this book, is about people who, some of whom are based in China, but also some of whom are going through these struggles and trying to create a Chinese identity and engaging with these ideas of Chinese influence outside the borders of the People's Republic of China, because the influence of China is global. And this conversation between the U.S. and China is affecting third-party countries and regions that are not even in the Asia-Pacific. So these themes of identity and their implications for people outside of China are more and more pressing. But the second thing is I hope that people can read these stories, even if they don't follow news about China, and understand that there are, you know, there's 1.3 billion people in China. They don't all think the same way. In fact, they behave and speak different languages and come from very, very different walks of life and backgrounds, and that they're not all the same, and that I hope that they find resonance and meaning and beauty and tragedy in these stories in the book, which I try to write in kind of a more novelistic way, despite the fact that they're in China, that they might find parallels with their own lives, simply because every one of the story is a human being.
Emily Fang with NPR, author of the new book, Let Only Red Flowers Bloom. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Reginald.
Again, that was NPR's Emily Fang talking with IPM's Reginald Hardwick about her new book, Let Only Red Flowers Bloom. Emily doesn't think the book will be made available in China because it's difficult for foreign books to get a publishing license. But she says it will be translated into Mandarin and sold in Taiwan. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Oriana. Reporting today contributed by Alex Degman, Colin Hyslop, Arjun Tucker, Kristen Schorsch, and Reginald Hardwick. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.